On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we discuss the latest news, provide an update and advice on the upcoming requirement for participation in OAS CAPS, the Outpatient and Ambulatory Surgery CAPS Survey, and in our focus segment, we discuss how to use data to enhance your supply chain operation with Katie St. Ange with Trivalence.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, the longest-running podcast specifically focused on the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. We'd like to thank our sponsor of this episode, Trivalence. Trivalence offers a comprehensive next-generation ASC solution that optimizes payment and supply chain performance, enabling actionable data insights. For more information about Trivalence, visit their website at trivalence.com. That's T-R-I-V-A-L-E-N-C-E.com.
Welcome to episode 216 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for April 7th, 2024. Recording from our studio in Spencerport, New York, this is Sue Cronkite, co-host of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey and Operations Manager for Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. We would like to remind our listeners that the ASC regulatory environment is a rapidly evolving landscape, and the material presented in this episode is based on the most current information available as of the date of recording. As such, it's important to recognize that this information may be subject to change, and we advise all ASCs to stay up to date with the latest regulations and guidelines issued by their relevant regulatory bodies. Joining me today is John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, and one of the most respected experts in the ambulatory surgery industry. With over 30 years of experience, Mr. Gailey has authored over 10 books on the ASC industry, and he is a sought-after speaker on regulatory accreditation and finance issues.
So, Sue, we're recording this about 24 hours before we get to see a total eclipse of the sun here in upstate New York. So we're all getting excited about that. And, of course, we have, I think all of us in upstate New York have relatives coming in from other parts of the country. So we're going to try to get this episode out pretty quickly here. But, of course, our attention right now is on what's happening to the sun tomorrow. But it's been another busy week. We have quite a number of new centers that are going up. And this last week, Sue, I had an opportunity to spend some time talking to the physician owners and enlightening them or reminding them that there's a vast difference in ASCs between an ASC and their practices. Mm-hmm. It seems to come up all the time. And, you know, for those of you that are listening that are thinking of building a surgery center, and especially if you're a physician and, you know, don't have any experience in the ASC environment, you really need to understand that the whole reason for this podcast is really to explain how complex the regulatory environment is. We often hear physicians in particular try to explain to staff, oh, don't worry, we don't need to do that in the surgery center because we're not as highly regulated as a hospital is. And those of us that have been in the industry any length of time know that that is really patently false. So it's another ongoing educational thing that I have to do in my role at Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies is keep the physicians up to date on what's going on and help them to understand that indeed they're taking on a lot of responsibility, and also reminding them that the role of a physician on or an owner on the governing body comes with quite a number of responsibilities that they need to be made aware of. So thought I would start by talking about that. We also know that finances are very difficult right now in many surgery centers. We're finding that the impact of the anesthesia crisis or the anesthesiologist and CRNA crisis is costing centers money. And we all know about the impact of inflation over the past, 3 to 4 years has really hit not only our own pocketbooks, but the pocketbooks of the surgery centers. So in that light, we are in our focus segment going to talk a little bit about how data can help ambulatory surgery centers have a much more efficient purchasing cycle. So that will come next. We also know that this last week, HHHC made some major changes to their software. We have been able to get into our new login for HHHC. Mm-hmm. So far, Sue, it looks very good. I know you haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I've been enjoying what I'm seeing. There isn't a lot there yet. It's still, things are starting to come online, but I'm impressed. I mean, the software seems to be a lot faster than the old software was.
Oh, good, because they do notoriously have kind of a slow website.
Yeah.
But I know we're all kind of nervous just because we're used to a certain way of doing things. So it's good news. It sounds like they've made good improvements.
Yeah. The only thing I would say, it is radically different, though. Mm-hmm. It is a very different look and feel. It doesn't look at all like the old system. So I really encourage you to to sign up as soon if you're a HHHC organization, mm-hmm. To sign up, get familiar with the website, and recognize that there will now be for HHHC organizations ongoing annual attestations that they're going to have to do. Mm-hmm. And we're already starting to see that. When I logged in, Sue, I saw a couple of our clients already had notices that their annual attestation was due. I don't know what the cycle is for that yet, but keep on top of that and acknowledge or know that you're going to have some ongoing responsibilities. By the way, HHHC probably is the last of the organizations to do that. It's always been a requirement for Joint Commission and Quad A and ACHC. So you and I were listening to the news the other day, and it was kind of like good news and bad news. They were talking about how a number of retirees are now going back to the workforce. We've talked about this on the podcast, how especially during the pandemic, people took early retirement or decided to get out of the workforce. Yep. But now they're coming back. And as I said, it's good news and bad news. I think, the bad news is some of them are coming back because of, economics. Yeah. The retirement funds are not enough to deal with, the current financial environment. And then, as you mentioned, sometimes people are coming back because they're getting bored in retirement. It seems hard for me to believe when I look at how busy you are, and you're not even retired yet, with all the things that you're going to be doing in retirement. Yeah. But
also, I think in the camaraderie, they said, if you had a good work environment, you probably might kind of miss taking being part of that team. So that's one point we want to make, is that if you're short-staffed and you had people that maybe retired a little bit early, just keep in touch with them.
Right.
Let them know there's a spot open if there is.
Another thing that I was reading too, the unemployment data came out this last week too, and it showed that the unemployment rate is remaining low. But when you dig into the numbers, it's very clear that a lot of the new jobs that have been created in the last, it seems to be about three months. That's as far back as I went. But a lot, if not the majority of the jobs that have been created have been part-time jobs. Now, the good news is that quite a number of those jobs, or I should say the majority of those jobs, are in healthcare as well as government. But so I think people are looking for part-time employment in the healthcare field. And as we know, we don't always need full-time people in our surgery centers, especially to handle, the changes that we see in volume, especially in those organizations that have cyclical cases. So I really do encourage you to kind of look back on people that you used to employ that might have retired or gone elsewhere to see if they might be interested in part-time employment coming back. And, of course, make your environment the type of place that people want to come back to. And, when you're advertising or when you have people come through your center, make sure that you're posting the fact that there are jobs available, because you never know, who might be a patient who might be interested, especially if they see what great care you provide. They might want to work for you. So definitely something you want to keep an eye on. Sue, let's talk about some of our recent news.
In Becker's ASC review from April 2nd, They listed the number of ASCs in each state. And in total, there are 6,087 Medicare-certified ASCs in the U.S. And this data is from the end of 2022, I think from December of 2022. Now, obviously, I'm not going to go through each state, but I just wanted to mention a few of them. The greatest number of ASCs are in California. They have 848. The next highest are Florida, Texas, and Georgia at 468, 458, and 386, respectively. And the lowest is Vermont. They only have two. D.C. has three. West Virginia has eight. North Dakota has 13. And Rhode Island has 14. So those are the next lowest ones down there.
I found that interesting that Rhode Island has 14, which is, you know, smaller than Vermont, certainly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's an interesting statistic. There, the people joke that in California, you know, there's a surgery center in every corner. I can see how that's true. I know another thing that's kind of, I won't say popular, but occurs in California much more than we see in other states is you might have one physical plant that has multiple surgery centers. Like Monday, Tuesday, it might be one surgery center, and say Thursday, so they double up on space. But it is interesting. It used to be that we were talking, we had almost 6,000 facilities, and now we've been consistently over that number. And of course, we do know that surgery centers are closing. We do know anecdotally that some surgery centers are suffering. We actually have one of our surgery centers that is, going through some very rough times right now with lack of anesthesia coverage. So I'm hoping that we'll find a solution. But indeed, if you're not aware of this right now, keep your anesthesia providers happy, because there are some organizations that just can't find anesthesia providers, especially in areas that might not be very close to a major metropolitan area with a lot of potential providers out there.
And on advisory board's daily briefing, they had some information about ECRI and the Institute for Safe Medication Practices, or ISMP, list of top patient safety concerns. So every year they compile this list and they highlight what healthcare leaders should focus on within their own organizations. And obviously some of these are going to be more hospital-based. Some you can use when you're looking at your patient safety and your ASC. So the 2024 list includes challenges transitioning newly trained clinicians from education into practice, which was really interesting because they're finding that, you know, especially with the pandemic, a lot of clinicians didn't get really great training or hands-on training that they would normally get. So they're finding a lot of people are really struggling. And I wonder if that's why, just from our own personal experience with, you know, residents and that kind of thing, maybe having some more challenges than there used to be. So hopefully this is a temporary situation. But, well, you know, watch any new providers that you have and just make sure people get a chance to get good training.
And keep in mind, this is not only, this is all across the board. This would be the physicians that are coming on board, the nursing staff, the surgical techs. And I think you're right. Even your daughter went through training during the pandemic and finished up her LPN at that point. And that was not the same experience that that others have had. And I guess we have to kind of state this too, that we're now in a position where we don't have the luxury of being able to hire people that have a lot of experience. So we are starting to have to hire people that are fresh out of school or have very limited training.
There are some benefits to that training to exactly what you do. They don't come with a preconceived notion that they might have from the hospital, but again, the training is so crucial.
And we don't have a tendency in our industry to have a lot of resources for that. So I think, but I agree, Sue, I think this is a great opportunity to, you know, hire people the right way, to train them the right way. And I think, but of course, this is a challenge and it's something we have to acknowledge. Yeah. I did want to point out that Advisory Board is a research organization. Their website is advisory.com, and they do a lot of different types of research in the healthcare field.
Just sort of discovered them. So I'm going to kind of bookmark them. But we will put a link to their website. And workarounds with barcode medication administration systems, now it's more hospital-based. Barriers to access maternal and perinatal care. Unintended consequences of technology adoption. So I wonder if they're talking about when people are transitioning to, you know, some type of EHR or something.
Which we do see. I mean, I think, absolutely. You know, the Yeah, and of course, you know, we work with SIS quite a bit, and mm-hmm, we know the challenges. Mm-hmm. They know the challenges come from going to a new system. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, many of those vendors out there try to sell you on a product that's going to solve all of your problems. Yeah. And the reality is eventually it will, but getting there is something you have to recognize. And that's why we talked to SIS. We talked to SIS quite a bit about that transition and how do you transition and preparing you for that transition.
Yeah, you can't expect it to just take no time at all. You've got to allow extra staff and that kind of thing while you're working through it. And this could even be, you know, when people get new equipment or anything technological, you just have to be really sure that you're using it correctly. And the decline in physical and emotional well-being of healthcare workers, I think, probably related a lot to the pandemic.
And burnout.
You know, there's higher levels of violence against healthcare. All healthcare workers, really. So,
and we are actually working with a center, not a surgery center. It's actually a clinic that recently had a violent confrontation with healthcare workers, and they're going to have to go through some training to prepare them for that. They sought us out. You know, they're the chief executive officer happens to be a former client of ours, and they recognize that we have a very robust education program and reached out to us. But that's something that I don't remember ever really having to do anything specific, and we tend to do very general training in that area. And to your point, Sue, I think it's something that we have to recognize is becoming a reality, is that we have to look at that.
Mm-hmm. And the complexity of preventing diagnostic error, providing equitable care for people with physical and intellectual disabilities, the delay in care resulting from drug supply and equipment shortages, that's something that we've all seen, I think.
And a concern that we might have if the anesthesia crisis starts to take organizations offline. In other words, if we have to delay care because we can't get an anesthesia provider, I think that's probably a very serious and growing problem.
And this one seems strange. Misuse of parenteral syringes to administer oral liquid medications.
I have no idea what that would be.
Not sure why people are using
that
type of syringe to administer oral medications. But and ongoing challenges with preventing patient falls, which, of course, is something that we're familiar with and always kind of a challenge.
But I think sometimes we forget how important it is. And this is one of those areas on this top 10 list where we really are at significant risk because of the rapidity with a patient goes through our processes and the high probability or possibility that they would be a fall risk. So
definitely making sure they're completely recovered and safe to go and that they've got somebody with them.
Right.
All of those kind of things when you're moving people through quickly can be a challenge. And these were all brought up by looking at the seriousness of any of these issues, you know, as well as the frequency and some other criteria. And of course, as I said, it's across the board with all healthcare type organizations. And I just wanted to read this quote from Marcus Schabacker, the president and CEO of ECRI, talking about the concerns on this year's list being largely related to industry-wide workforce crisis. So many of our patient safety concerns for 24 were exacerbated by a shortage of prepared healthcare clinicians. Through no fault of their own, clinicians who started practicing medicine in the last several years didn't have the same early experience as those who came before them, before the pandemic laid bare critical weaknesses in our healthcare system. He had said many clinicians who graduated within the last few years have also faced dramatic shifts in the healthcare field, including teachers and mentors leaving, a rise in new technology like artificial intelligence and higher patient volumes. And all of those factors are making it dramatically more difficult for these new clinicians to get necessary experience in a supervised, controlled environment. So they're often thrown into the midst of it and have to figure it out. That causes pretty significant stress and safety concerns from our perspective. And another thing they mentioned that was concerning to me, they found that newer clinicians, the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality found that newer clinicians are less likely to bring up safety issues than more experienced colleagues. Only 33% of clinicians with less than a year of experience voluntarily reported safety events in 22. In comparison, 50% of the clinicians with 6 to 10 years of experience reported safety events during that same period. So it's just very concerning to us that these less experienced clinicians seem to lack confidence or an understanding of the importance of reporting safety events. So we've talked before about the importance of reporting near misses, making it sort of a good catchphrase so that people are willing to talk about mistakes that have happened or mistakes that almost happened, so that, you know, that's just so important for safety and quality improvement. And with people coming in being afraid to talk about this stuff, it really is concerning. And as I said, it isn't necessarily something that we deal with as much with the new clinicians, but it was interesting to me just because I know myself and a lot of people have commented that in some ways healthcare, it doesn't feel as safe as it used to. And I wonder if this is part of it, and, you know, at least it's addressable.
Hopefully. Yeah, and I think that's a very good point. I love his comment. I mean, I don't like that he had to say these, but I do agree that those are concerns we have. And again, you know, when I got into the industry some 35 years ago, we were always hiring people that had a lot of experience. And with that, of course, as you said, you know, come some problems. But now we're not in that position anymore. We have to hire people that have less experience than perhaps we've seen in the past, and we need it. You know, and so it really all comes down to education too, you know, making sure we educate people that we and making sure that leadership makes it well known to the employees that leadership has their back. You know, if they're going to bring something to their attention, to the attention of leadership, that they're going to do something about it and not have any repercussions back to the employee for them bringing it up.
So next we wanted to talk about OAS caps. So, John, first, do you want to explain what that is?
So OAS CAP stands for the Outpatient Ambulatory Surgery Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and Systems. It is a mechanism that we are going to be required to implement in our organizations to assess the quality of care as perceived by the patients that go through your system. Now, this system has been in place, or a similar system has been in place in hospitals for quite a number of years. And it has been thrust upon us, I guess that's the right term, as part of our Medicare quality reporting requirements. So let's kind of point out the failure to implement this program means that you would have a reduction in the amount of your reimbursement for Medicare purposes. And, of course, if your Medicare reimbursement is used as a proxy for your third-party payers, that could also impact the reimbursement for third-party payers also. So this is a pretty big deal. This is ultimately probably going to replace the patient satisfaction surveys that you are currently using in your organizations. Though we're going to talk about this at the end. That doesn't necessarily need to be, but it is something that you might want to think about given how complex the OAS CAP system is. So, Sue, why don't you go into what's going on right now?
So right now, this is voluntary. Some ASCs may be doing it, but it becomes mandatory in 2025. And you are going to need a vendor. This isn't something that you just do on your own. So it's really important. Anybody who hasn't started that process should be looking at that.
And we should also point out that you have to have a CMS-approved vendor.
Yes. Yeah. And we'll have that website on there where you can find the information. So there are 34 questions, and they can be collected via telephone, mail with telephone follow-up if they don't receive a response. It can be done via email with mail follow-up or email with telephone follow-up. And the OAS CAPS website lists 16 vendors that have been approved, but they don't all offer all of those forms of collection. And I looked around. I was not able to find any type of a list saying what each of them does. But if you go to that website, to the OAS CAPS website, and look at the vendors. There are email addresses, so you know you could call or email these places and just really start that process. But I don't think it's going to be a simple process.
No, I know I was watching you as you were gathering this information. It took you quite a long time just to gather some very basic information here. It's not easy. You know, you can't go to a website, for example, for virtually all of these vendors. There's no easy website to go to get this information. And as you said, there is no summary. We had thought about doing that, and then we realized that first of all, one thing that we've seen is some of these vendors are not necessarily in business right now. I think they have weeded out the organizations that have gone out, but who's to say that's going to be even accurate tomorrow? And we also know there's quite a bit of consolidation in the industry. As a matter of fact, we know that one of the major vendors out there has been buying up a lot of the smaller vendors also. So, Sue, we can't stress this enough. If you have not already begun the process, you might actually be behind the eight ball now.
Yes.
You know, we are about 8 months away from it becoming mandatory, and I think it's extremely important that you start looking for vendors, start experimenting, sign up, and then get the system implemented and then start experimenting to make sure that you're actually going to be able to participate in time to meet the January 1st, 2025 deadline.
Yeah, if you run into any glitches or anything, you don't want to be doing that once it's required.
That's right.
So better to start as soon as you can. Three of the overall measures, ASC 15A OAS caps about facilities and staff, 15B is communication about procedure, and 15C is preparation for discharge and recovery. And then two single question categories are overall rating of facility and the recommendation of the facility. And you can view the survey at oascaps.org, and we can put that link in the show notes. But there's a lot of the things are questions you might have asked at your center. Mm-hmm. And then there are some demographic questions. I read someplace, as I said, there's just kind of bits and pieces of information around saying that you could possibly add some of your own questions to the end. But then with 34 questions, do you really want to make it longer? And I know I just have so many questions. Like, I wonder what if you're on the phone with somebody, or you're not, but the vendor is on the phone with somebody asking questions and they get halfway through and the person says, 15 questions, I'm done. Do you get that information or do you not get that information? And like we've talked about before, I think most of us are a lot more likely to put the time into something if we're unhappy and we really want to be heard with our complaints. But if it's just, it wasn't great because it was a surgery. I wish I wouldn't have had to have a surgery, but they all treated me well. Everything went well. No complications. You might not take the time.
And we are starting to see the satisfaction survey numbers going down for those organizations that have implemented these OAS caps surveys already. And I don't think it's because there's been a decline in the quality. I just think that, as you said, Sue, when people have to go through 34 plus questions, they're not likely to do that unless they're generally unhappy or if they're an older person. And who has a lot of time on their hands. I will say, I mean, when I get surveys, if I have more than five questions, I stop it.
Yeah.
And unless I'm not happy with the service, and then I want to spend time explaining, my dissatisfaction. So I'm very concerned about how this is going to impact us. And of course, with 34 questions, the questions are much more granular than the questions that we've tended to ask in the past. We, as a matter of fact, as a company, always recommended that you kept the number of questions to a bare minimum, like 5, 10
really
at the absolute
things.
Most. Mm-hmm. Right. And focused on things that tend to be problematic. You're always going to have questions like, the overall rating. Would you go back to this organization? Would you recommend it to somebody else? But OAS Caps really gets into each of the different people that they would encounter, as well as quite a bit of time spent on discharge and recovery, which I don't think, generally we might only have one question, were you provided appropriate discharge instructions? Mm-hmm. But the OAS Caps are a little bit more granular than that. Now, one of the concerns that I've had is, are we going to get the type of information that we really want? Mm-hmm. Now, you spent some time, a lot more time than I have, looking at the questions there, and I think you feel that the questions are being asked, but we might not be able to focus on those areas. We can't get more granular. Like, in the past, we've recommended that if you start to get satisfaction survey answers that lead you to more questions, then you just revise the questions a little bit to ask your patients for more specific information. You really can't do that easily in this process here. So the question that I've had is, should we continue doing our own satisfaction survey? Mm-hmm. Should we be asking questions during the post-op, phone call, for example, like we might have been doing in the past, just to kind of assess and get more specific information about areas that there might be some concern to patients. So we're going to keep a very close eye on this and see how it goes with the implementation. Mm-hmm. So far, the people that have implemented it have not really complained about it as much as I thought they would. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. then again, there isn't a lot of experience right now. And many of these organizations, especially with the bigger companies out there, they have a lot of experience in doing this and a lot of resources available to do this, more than we did when, you know, we as an individual organization sent out satisfaction surveys to our patients. So, mm-hmm. But I think we're going to see the participation rate going down, but yeah. perhaps the amount of information much more specific, much more detailed. And I do think that one thing that will be very nice is being able to compare your organization against other organizations. This mm-hmm. external benchmarking will be literally built into this right process there. Here.
Yeah. And just a quick note from CMS, the survey is required and linked to reimbursement. It was in 2024 for HOPDs, and now it'll be 2025 for ASCs. If an HOPD or ASC does not conduct and submit OAS caps as part of the quality reporting requirement, they will receive a reduction of 2 percentage points in their annual fee schedule update, as you mentioned.
And remember, this is not the only thing that's included in the Medicare quality reporting. So we've talked about that in a number of episodes in the past, so definitely want to keep on top of that. So as we introduced earlier, you know, the organizations, ASCs are starting – ASCs continue to have financial challenges, and we had an opportunity to interview Katie St. Ange from Trivalence last week. And so I'm going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, we'll have this interview with Katie St. Ange talking about how technology can help us in reducing operational challenges in the supply chain.
Do you work long hours at your ASC, ordering from multiple vendors or managing back orders? Do you manually track POs and invoices? Do you need help sifting through paper to find payment discrepancies? Most ASCs are understaffed, overworked, and wear multiple hats, which leads to burnout. Trivalence launched an intuitive procurement-to-payment solution that optimizes your ASC's performance and removes the frustration from daily tasks, allowing for a happier, more productive staff. The Trivalence solution streamlines the disjointed supply chain in your busy surgery center, from ordering supplies to managing your purchase orders and invoices to making payments. The platform provides a robust dashboard with actionable reporting and lets you track your spending down to the penny. Visit trivalence.com to schedule a demo or learn more about this all-in-one solution. That's TriValence.com.
So I'm here with Katie St. Ange with Trivalence. Trivalence is one of our wonderful sponsors of the podcast. And Katie, thank you so much for being a sponsor of the podcast. And today, Katie's going to join us to talk about how to use data to enhance supply chain operation. Welcome, Katie. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your role over at Trivalence?
Absolutely, John. And it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us. So as you stated, Katie St. Ange, and I'm the SVP of Product and Operations at Trivalence. I've been with the company since its inception, and I manage the product team as well as the wonderful folks that help implement our solution at customers. So happy to be here today.
That's great. And Trivalence has got a wonderful product we'll talk a little bit about at the end as we talk about how technology can help us. But let's start by talking about what's going on with the supply chain right now. We haven't spoken about it actually probably since the last time we had Trivalence speaking here. So can you talk a little bit about what the current state of the supply chain is, especially in healthcare?
Yeah, thank you, John. Supply chain in healthcare right now, especially since the pandemic, has been a world of combination of whack-a-mole in terms of where can I go to get the product that I need. There are shortages that are unpredictable. And with that, there are also tools and solutions that are coming up that help healthcare individuals understand where to get their product from. So there's a lot out there that's just scratching the surface, and happy to go deeper where you have curiosities.
Well, and of course, the problem didn't start with the pandemic. I think we all have a tendency to kind of blame the pandemic on everything that's not right in the world right now. So talk a little bit about what was even occurring before the pandemic hit us in 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I've had the pleasure of being in and around supply chain for over 20 years. I started my career as a buyer at a large IDN. And even in that world, finding the right information to get the right product to our end users, who, you know, of course, the clinicians, to service the patients that we needed, was a challenge. It's a combination of where do I go? What are my resources to understand what are the products available? And then what are my resources to understand and how can I source those effectively and efficiently? That's on the procurement side. Then we get over to the managing of inventory. When you have over 7,000 SKUs to manage in and out of your operations, that takes a lot of infrastructure to do effectively. So a lot of data-oriented elements that are required to manage operations effectively.
And currently our supply chain is, it's fair to say probably that it's broken in many areas right now, and especially in the last 2 years, you know, with the world situation. So can you talk a little bit about some of the things that are causing angst among all of our materials managers as they try to get products for surgery centers, especially, you know, what's going on in China and the Mideast?
During the pandemic, we learned a lot about, unfortunately, counterfeit products and the inability to rely on overseas resources for many reasons. There were, unfortunately, players out there that were taking advantage of the situation. So a lot of manufacturing was folks were trying to bring manufacturing back stateside. And there's, you know, complexities along with that as well. So just a lot to consider in the supply chain overall, and understanding, I'll go back to what I stated before, was a challenge for me 20 years ago as a buyer. Just what are my real sources that I can rely on to get that product? Who are my partners that I can rely on to get what I need in the time frame that I need it to service my ultimate customer, which ultimately is the patient.
And we are suffering from, I mean, I don't know of any time in my 35 plus year career where we found the abundance of shortages in various products. And now, of course, with shipping, you know, being much more complicated than it was before, is it likely these problems are going to go away anytime soon?
I wish I could say that they would be going away anytime soon. And all of those factors, John, that you stated are impacting costs. So it becomes more difficult to plan and to budget. If we look at what's happening with oil prices, if we look at what's happening to shipping prices, if we look at, take petroleum, for instance, the number of products that impacts, not only from a shipping standpoint, but that's the backbone of a lot of these products. When we look at gloves, when we look at any of the plastics, it adds such a variability to the planning process that it's a challenge to understand how do we plan, you know, budget-wise, material-wise, source-wise for the future.
And where do you think, so the average materials manager in a surgery center, of course, it tends to be a lone soul. You know, it's not like in a hospital where you have an entire materials management department. It's one person who often is not a materials management professional, whatever that might be, like yourself, you know, perhaps was in the past. You know, the average surgery center just either can't find an individual like that or wouldn't be able to make that position full time.
Exactly right. And that in and of itself has been a challenge. Staff turnover has been a huge challenge. As I was growing up professionally in my career, I had the luxury of that being my sole function. When we talk about ASCs, the materials manager is likely wearing many different hats and perhaps not that title at all. They may be a nurse manager. They may be an administrator. They may be all of those things and still responsible for getting product in for their cases, for their surgeries. And to be able to do that role effectively and to be able to give time back to the person that has so many hats, Mm-hmm. It's really important to have a solid process and to have resources at your fingertips that can help inform decisions and make decisions easy so that they have to think less about what they need to do as far as procurement and supply chain is concerned. But that in and of itself can be very challenging.
Well, and having been in that position before, and of course you were in much larger, you mentioned that you work with integrated delivery networks, which of course have a lot more resources. But now, of course, in your role at Trivalent, you work with a lot of, you know, smaller centers, you know, and larger centers too. But you know, the Trivalent product is something that really has been geared toward everybody in the industry. What are you finding is the average experience level or knowledge base or capabilities of a materials manager in an average, you know, 2 to 4 room ambulatory surgery center?
Yeah, absolutely. And it, what we're seeing a lot is that the experience is based on either clinical or administrative or origins, right? So I'm a clinician and I know my product very well because I've had to use it. And now I've been asked as well to service this function of procuring product for my ASC, for my center. And what we're seeing, I'm going to go a step further. What we're seeing in their workflows is a lot of manual effort. So I'm either handwriting a purchase order, I'm calling my reps, or I'm going to multiple websites. I have many tabs up on my screen because I don't unfortunately have a solution that's going to give me all of that in one consolidated space. We see a lot of screens with sticky notes around, you know, what was I supposed to buy this Tuesday? Which, you know, surgeon prefers which product? Very unfortunate for them, paper-based and very manual, which can, of course, increase time and complexity.
I'm laughing because my co-host Sue, you know, she feels like she's graduated from those sticky notes that are stuck around her screen to now she has an app that has sticky notes on her desktop. But that brings up the problem that we have. I you know, my main office, I'm in a studio as I'm recording this. I have 8 screens in front of me. And I need that because there is no one application that I can use in order to record or run a podcast. Same thing when I'm, you know, working on a regulatory issues. I've got, you know, multiple screens in the office. That's where a materials manager is now. They've got 1,000 icons and probably need a couple more screens, by the way. And, you know, talk about the technology that we have now, the applications that the average surgery center materials manager has, and how difficult it is to manage all of those.
You know, certainly, and you know, we'll go one step up from sticky notes. There's a lot of usage of Excel out there as well, which helps organize. And I grew up in Excel. I love analytics. I love being able to review data, trends, etc. With Excel, one of the challenges or something like it, one of the challenges that you'll have is you have inconsistent data. You have a lot of variability and it's still working off of a list that you then have to go to another screen to do another part of your workflow and then another screen. And if I'm worried about procurement or managing procurement, I haven't even touched how am I going to talk about the person responsible for paying the bills, paying the invoices when they come in. If that's somebody else, if I have the luxury of having a coworker that's going to manage that, how do I communicate effectively from my lists and my workflows to the person paying the bills to say, yes, John, that product came in, go ahead and pay it. Or yes, John, that is the price that I had on my purchase order. It matches up. Go ahead and pay it. It's takes a lot of time without the right system in place to do that effectively or efficiently.
Well, and that really brings up a good point is that we've always been challenged in the industry with having good technology. You know, people use QuickBooks in general to, you know, pay the bills and to maintain their accounting system, but that's not enough to run an average surgery center. You need something like SIS, obviously, in order to do the billing. And SIS often has or does have, you know, inventory management capabilities, but it was never designed to be an inventory management program. So you're making a lot of compromises right now, which is still challenging.
Yep, 100%. And to have a system that its function is intended to your point, for those workflows can be it can be really a game changer and a lifesaver in terms of time that you don't have to spend trying to put a square peg in a round hole. Can it work? Does it work? Yes, we use the tape and the Band-Aids and the sticky notes. But when you have the power of technology that is intended for that function and integrates with those systems that are intended for their respective functions, so like an SIS or a QuickBooks, then you can really maximize your power and just get back to the things that matter to you most in ASC, presuming you're wearing those multiple hats.
So let's just kind of remind our listeners of what the average purchasing cycle is. You know, it starts with either, you know, an individual saying, I need this product, or an identification that a product needs to be restocked in the inventory system. Again, a lot of that is very manual still to this day. You don't have people like logging in and into a computer and doing that. And even doing inventory management is often, paper oriented. And then, you know, the purchasing manager, the procurement, whatever that title is, materials manager, identifies the product that needs to be purchased. And then, as you've talked about or kind of alluded to, puts an order in. That could be on the phone, could be on the internet. It could be sitting across the table from a distributor, you know, who showed up at your doorstep. That still happens there. And then they put the order in. Then the product is received, and then product is used. An invoice is received, and then the accounts payable department looks at that invoice, matches it up with the purchase document, matches it up with the document proving that it was received. And then a check is generated, or some type of electronic payment is generated, and the vendor is paid. And there is no one system out there that helps with all of those things yet, right?
Well, fortunately, there is now a system that helps with all of those things. And thank you for that workflow. It is spot on. And I like to, when you're describing the inventory, a lot of folks are using the eyeball method, you know, do I have what I need here? Or they're trying to match up. These are the cases I have this week. Do I have the product that I need? And in terms of the invoices coming in, I mean, we're going into these ASCs to understand workflows and to help maximize with our customers. And what we see are stacks of paper, right? So this is how I manage my inventory. This is how I manage my orders. And folks can't see me because this is radio based, podcast based, but I'm literal physical stacks of paper that I'm stapling my purchase order to my invoice. And where's my packing slip? So to be able to bring that all in one solution, not only can organizations save from having either multiple solutions, whether that solution is my sticky note-based solution or one solution that covers maybe just a portion of that. But you're going to also build a lot of data and insights. If you think about, John, the workflow that you just took us through, there's a lot of potential for rich insights if I can connect all of it and if I can capture all of those data points as well. So to have a single solution that covers that entire workflow can be very powerful for an organization, because you can look at trends. You can look to see how many discrepancies do I have on my invoices? Do I have a problem child supplier where I have a spike in invoice discrepancies, or maybe it's not that, maybe it's just a miscommunication. So getting those insights will let you manage your business more effectively, more efficiently as well, because you don't have to stack your papers up and do the tallies on your own. You have the potential for a lot of automation.
Yeah. When I was an administrator, I remember, as part of a quality improvement study, I looked at the number of times that the invoice was wrong. Could be the wrong price, the wrong quantity that was received, the wrong product that was received, or there was just some type of mathematical error. And I was shocked that it was over 50% of those invoices had something wrong. Could be something relatively minor, but that took a lot of time on the part of myself as an administrator, the business office manager, et cetera. And of course, that person who's paying the bill is kind of far removed from the person who actually ordered the product. And if there is no communication, and that happens a lot, by the way, both you and I are using our hands an awful lot. I'm sorry, our listeners can't see that. But that's the real challenge is that, you know, we're in such a hurry to pay the bills, to get the product in, to identify what needs to be done, to listen to the doctor saying, I need this product, and by the way, I need it tomorrow, which takes them away from, you know, doing those double checks. So I know that we're often leaving money on the table for a number of reasons. Maybe we're not doing a good job of double checking that invoice. We're not double checking to make sure that we're paying the same price that materials manager agreed to. And of course, as we're alluding to here, the ultimate solution here is, of course, technology.
Absolutely. And I'd love to, if you don't mind, lean in on a couple of those similar stats, right? Yeah. We've talked about the procurement and payment process. Part of that is having typically, or can be, is having an item master, whether your item master is on stickies or in Excel or in a solution. It's a known, you know, stat or established stat that 30% of anybody's item master at any given point in time is incorrect. Yeah. That's your baseline for starting your order, as well as for any analytics that you might be able to do to understand your trends. So if 30% of your item master is wrong, you're starting yourself off on the wrong foot for your orders and understanding your business. It can also cost a little over $7, almost $8 per incorrect SKU to manage a bad item master. So if you have, say, 5,000 items that you're typically ordering, which is what we're seeing as an average for our customer base right now, they have about 5,000 SKUs that they're managing throughout the course of their year. 30% of that being incorrect, you're spending over $11,000, if you do the math out, on just having bad data. So having a system that helps to control that and manage that can really be a game changer.
Well, and just inventory management. I mean, I think one of the things I get out to a lot of surgery centers, as do you, I laugh because I walk into the average administrator's office and there's no place for me to sit anymore because, you know, it's being used as a storage location. And therein lies one of the problems, okay? Where is all of your inventory stored? Are you purchasing items that you already have somewhere else in the organization? And is your data correct? Is your inventory correct? It probably isn't. Well, it isn't. I guarantee you.
Guarantee it isn't. Yeah. So imagine a world in which you have visibility, easy visibility to all of these aspects, the item master, the inventory management, just being able to click a button and say, you know, what is my inventory value right now? Being able to click a button and get a report on what have I set my PARs on? And does that make sense based on what is my order history been? Right. Technology, I keep saying analytics and trending and all that, but when you look at it, technology can really facilitate or tamper, if you don't have it, your ability to get these insights so that you can be more effective in your daily function.
And Katie, I mean, we can guarantee you're leaving money on the table here, perhaps over-order. I mean, that's the other point that I've seen is that sometimes we buy too much of a product because we're worried we're going to run out of it, and then it expires. You know, as a surveyor, I'm always looking for products that are expired, and I always find them, by the way. And if you don't have that data, if you don't know how many you're going to need, if there's no tie-in between your scheduling and your purchasing cycle, and then ultimately the payment cycle, then you're going to be leaving money on the table, right?
100%, 100,000%. Yeah, one of my former mentors would start almost every meeting with the same phrase. And he'd come into the room and he'd say, no measure, no margin, no margin, no mission. And you can't measure your margins if you don't have the right data. And it is really tough to get the right data to measure those gaps without the right systems in place. So it took me a hot minute because he wouldn't give any context. He would just come into the room and say that, and then we'd start our meeting. It took me a hot minute to really appreciate what that meant to organizations and to individuals that are part of any of this workflow that you stated out for us, from the procurement all the way to the payment. And the beauty of data and good data is that it really helps you hone in on where are the areas that I need to focus to improve my practice, to understand what money I am leaving on the table. And in today's world, with the staff shortages, with the turnover in staff, you might have somebody that had a knowledge of a workflow, and then they go off to another opportunity, or they retire. Great for them. Sad for you because you lost that knowledge. If you have the right systems in place, that's not as big of a pain point. And you can, again, focus on the impact of the insights and not trying to figure out how do I understand what I am leaving on the table.
And by the way, I'm speaking to our listeners that are administrators and especially directors of nursing here who are struggling to find a good QI study to use for their HHHC or Joint Commission survey coming up. This is ripe for that type of thing. Data analysis, taking data, finding out how much money you might be wasting or how many times you paid wrong or how often your product has expired before you're able to use it. This is ripe for a good QI study. And that brings us to the kind of the issue of our multiple computer systems, the different types of computer technologies that we have out there right now, and the fact that it's evolving. So let's just talk a little bit about that. And as we all know, we have often QuickBooks, which we use for paying our bills. And then we have a management information system such as SIS that manages our schedule. And in between, there's a lot of data discrepancies. There's a lot of missing, or there's a lot of data that's available, but that don't necessarily talk to each other. And that has to evolve, and that is evolving. So that kind of gets to where we are right now. What can we do? What type of technology is out there? What is what's evolving in the marketplace to be able to make this job easier of integrating all those systems?
Yeah, absolutely. There are systems in place, well-established systems in place that do functions, and I'll describe them here really well. But yeah, Perhaps that's the connector that's missing. So there are well-established systems that help with their procurement function and get you from, I need to create a purchase order, I need to manage my item master, all the way up until I'm going to have a bill, an invoice come into the system. There are systems, well-established systems that enable and facilitate payment. So I have my invoice and all of that, and now I'm getting ready to pay. Well-established systems that do that. There are well-established systems that help with the accounting functionality of all of that. What has been absent, and what there's a need for, and what we are starting to see and build as well, are those systems that integrate and help not only bring those together, but help talk to one another. So what is my scheduling system telling me about my inventory levels? What is my accounting platform telling me in terms of general ledger codes? And what's the system in between that can bring it all together? How can I leverage a technology that helps displace, the 1, 2, 3, 4 systems and talk to the primary systems that are always going to be there for me as well? So what we're seeing, I'll wrap around that. What we're seeing with technology is that we have longstanding players that are really functional in silos of the process. And where I think we need to help folks evolve is to understanding where are their systems that help connect the key components of our business to make our lives easier. I like to think about, what in my personal life do I have access to that I wish I had at work? And if you can find an organization that is helping to bring the KISS principle, the vision of ease to your work life that you have in your personal life, lean in on that concept in that company.
Yeah. And of course, in our personal life, we have, I was telling you before we started that I'm starving right now. You know, I can fix that problem pretty quickly by either, you know, going on the internet and, you know, ordering food to be delivered or even ordering groceries to be delivered. And by the way, it'll be here in a couple hours at the latest. Or Amazon, as we've talked about many times, where, you know, you go to one place to be able to compare various prices for different types of products. And wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great if we had something similar to those types of services? So are there services out there, Katie, that might be able to do that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some fun along with that. And I'll lead on one specific technology component. There's really fun enhancements happening with scanning capabilities as well. Yeah. So there's, again, imagine the ease of your phone and taking something and just, you know, having the food automatically appear at your doorstep. Technology is coming into play where you can, I'll use my very technical term, zap an item with your camera. And all of a sudden it's telling you all this information. Well, who's the manufacturer? How many do I have in stock? Is it time to reorder or not? So those technologies are available and coming into play for ASCs as well, which is really exciting to see.
Well, and with, you know, the doctors or with our physicians, you know, obviously always wanting the latest technology, wanting the latest products. Sometimes they describe something they saw somewhere else. Hopefully they took a picture of it and provided it to your, I mean, I know, like, I can go into a store and take a picture. I hate to keep advertising Amazon because that is not my intention. They're not a sponsor. But, you know, you can take a picture of something and instantly, you know, be able to, you know, find that product on the internet, you know, using that technology. I think that's what you've just described here is really, you know, that's now coming to us here. Which will greatly simplify the process, or just, you know, being able to reorder something in our inventory that we might not have been able to figure the SKU out right away.
Exactly right. And something as simple and seemingly benign as a picture can give so much value. So having a system that gives you the visual, that gives you the name, that gives you the flexibility to, let's say there's a standard name for a product, but, you know, your team calls it a Christmas tree because it's red and green. To have the flexibility to label the products in the way that your staff is used to interacting with them can really, again, give you so much power in terms of I get time back because now this is very easy for me to do and manage.
Well, and you and I were talking before we started recording about artificial intelligence. You know, I mean, we use it on a daily basis. If I can't figure out what I'm looking for, you know, using artificial intelligence on the internet, I can just type in, you know, what is the name of et cetera, you know, and describe what it is. And using artificial intelligence, it comes up right away. Both of us kind of said we don't exactly know where we're going with artificial intelligence in materials management and you know, the supply chain, but we know it's going to have an impact. Can you make any prediction at all, or other than to say that it's going to happen quickly?
No, I agree. It's going to happen. It's going to happen quickly. And where I lean in regards to AI is how do we set ourselves up for success to pivot and lean in on that? How do we become adaptable to make sure that we're giving our teams the information, the education they need to really take advantage of this? How do we give our teams the level of comfort that they need to live in what the new world will be and make sure that they know that they're going to be able to still provide value? And how do I work with my team to help adopt that technology? So it's something that supplements and supports what we're doing instead of becoming a barrier.
So talk a little bit about how your technology is an example of where the world is moving to, you know, how we're evolving, you know, and how it can greatly simplify the processes in the average surgery center.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Automation is key. Being able to bring simple workflows to complex situations is where we're leaning in. We are a truly user-led organization in that we are very close to our users, understanding what are their pain points and how can we automate their workflows. How can we give our users time back is key. On the backbone of all of that, though, John, is taking data and insights along every step of the way so that we're helping to build for our customers the ability to not have to think about the insight that it's presented to them. Not only that, they can complete their workflows in an efficient manner so they can get back to really what matters to them most in their organization.
Yeah, which, and again, a lot of our listeners, of course, are administrators and directors of nursing. They're now, depending upon the size of your organization, they're probably also the materials manager. But you make a very important point here is that information is extraordinarily important for us to be able to determine, you know, where we are and what we might be able to do in order to improve our situation, improve the quality of the services that we're offering, reduce the costs, et cetera. And I think that's where, you know, finding a solution that pulls those disparate systems together is really where you guys come in.
Absolutely. And if you look at the procurement and payment workflows inherent in this app, there's inventory in the background as well.
Yeah.
There are many different partners that you have to interact with. So just lean in on the procurement side. I'm interacting as an ASC manager with at least 25 different suppliers between my actual supplies, my services, rent, utility bills, et cetera. Not every one of those suppliers is going to be as technologically advanced as what I would like them to be. So one of the values that the Trivalence platform is bringing to users is leaning in on how do I create automation where it doesn't necessarily exist? How do I take something as simple as my supplier has an email that accepts orders, and how do I make that an automated workflow? So Trivalence is doing that right now for our customers. We're bringing automated insights so that folks have less paper, less clicks, less tabs to look at, and more insight.
Yeah, and I think the best way that I can equate it, we struggle in trying to describe what Trivalence does. And of course, this isn't all about Trivalence. I mean, there's technology out there that's coming up, but you provide, you're very unique in the industry. And the best I can do, and I hate to go back to Amazon, but I buy things on Amazon that I could buy directly from the manufacturer or from another distributor, but it's easier because in one platform, I can compare prices, I can look at different versions of a product, and most of my vendors are there now in some way, and then I can take care of payment right away, approve the payment, et cetera. I mean, even within our own company, Ambitory Healthcare Strategies, we buy almost all of our supplies there because that payment is done instantly. And then I hit another button and it goes right into my, accounting system. So I know what I purchased and keep that data. And am I correct in saying that that's similar to what Trivalence is doing? If we're trying to describe it in a simpler process or a simpler way for our administrators and nurse managers.
Yeah, many similarities, and there's a lot I really like about that example, because you get to say, who are the vendors that I interact with, and imagine interacting with all of those vendors in one place, not only to your point on the procurement side, but on the payment side as well. I will highlight it's not a marketplace. However, it's going to give you the solution that you need to understand of all the vendors that I'm interacting and doing business with now. What are all the tools that I need to interact with them successfully, to manage my inventory successfully, to pay my invoices successfully, and know that I'm paying the right amount as well?
And as a person that was trained in accounting and concerned about controls and making sure we're not paying an inappropriate vendor or somebody that actually didn't deliver the product or paying the wrong price, of course, that's very appealing. I can double check very easily, make sure I didn't, pay the wrong price for something that I ordered on Amazon, much the same way that you would have. And again, that information is always going to be there. I don't have to go look it up on a piece of paper that's been archived, 5 years ago. It's always available to me.
Exactly right. Very powerful insights available with powerful reporting, because the system is built off of a backbone of clean data. And that just can bring so much value to an organization.
So that leads me to the kind of difficult question, where, what type of people are we going to be needing to hire in the future? I mean, I'm old. It's hard for me to adopt the new technology. I'm barely able to run the studio here. So we've got to think about that, don't we? Because there's a lot of turnover now in the industry. And of course, we know that our options are somewhat limited. But what types of skills do you think somebody in the procurement, however we want to call it, in a surgery center, a procurement, materials management, what types of skills should we be looking for as we're hiring new people in this area?
Yeah, great question. One near and dear to my heart, being part of that function throughout my career. I think having somebody that is adaptable and curious are very strong qualities to look for that will help get you very far. If you have somebody that is curious, they're going to be that person that naturally asks the questions that even if they don't know what they don't know, they're going to be curious with you to make sure that they're getting to the point that you need them to in the organization. Adaptable is key because we're always having to pivot. You don't know what's going to come at you at any given point in the day. And if you have somebody that's adaptable and has the great attitude to be comfortable being adaptable, you're setting yourself up for success. There are other qualities that I think are inherent that you would want to have. Pays attention to details, works well with others, because not only do you have surgeons and accounting folks to work with and administrators to work with, but you want somebody that has those key traits about them.
And once you find that person, keep them happy, because turnover is just a nightmare right now in our industry. So thank you, Katie. This has been great. I think it's an area that is certainly evolving very quickly and has a direct impact on the bottom line and the quality of care we provide. And I think you provided a great oversight.
Well, thank you for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
In this segment, we provide an update on upcoming topics for the podcast, our upcoming virtual conferences, and upcoming speaking engagements for John and his staff and other events in the ASC industry.
So ASCA 2024 is only 2 weeks away. It's going to be at the Gaylord Palms Resort and Convention Center in Orlando, Florida. It's going to be from April 17th through the 20th. We are going to be there in mass. I believe we have about 12 people coming from the company. And we're going to be doing a couple episodes down there. Sue, you're not going to be joining me, unfortunately, so you'll be staying up here, but you'll be busy editing all those episodes that we publish very quickly. So you'll take care of that. I had to do that myself the last time, so I'm grateful that you're going to be able to do that from the studio here in Rochester. But if you do see us there, give us a shout out or send us an email, and we'll try to meet up. We always love doing panel discussions with a lot of the attendees during this conference, so look us up if you're going to ASCA 2024.
And the Arizona Ambulatory Surgery Center Association's conference is April 27th and 28th in Scottsdale, Arizona at the Westin Careland Resort.
The Gulf States Conference is June 11th through the 13th, 2024 in Biloxi, Mississippi at the Beau Rivage Resort and Casino.
Becker's Spine, Orthopedic and Pain Management-Driven ASC Conference is June 19th and through the 22nd in Chicago at the Swiss Hotel.
The Florida Society of Ambulatory Surgical Centers annual conference and trade show is July 17th through the 19th, 2024, in Orlando, Florida, at the Signia by Hilton Orlando Bonnet Creek.
The Texas Ambulatory Surgery Center Society's annual conference is July 24th through the 26th in Galveston, Texas, at the San Luis Resort Spa and Conference Center.
The Georgia Society of ASCs and the South Carolina ASC Association's joint semiannual conference and trade show is going to be August 15th through the 16th, 2024, in one of our favorite places in the world, Sue, Hilton Head, South Carolina, at the Marriott Hilton Head Resort and Spa.
And the California Ambulatory Surgery Association's annual conference is September 4th through the 6th in Anaheim, California, at the Anaheim Marriott.
The Tennessee Ambulatory Surgery Center Association annual conference is September 12th through the 13th, 2024, in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the Chattanoogan.
The Becker's ASC 30th annual meeting, the Business and Operations of ASCs, is October 30th through November 2nd in Chicago, Illinois, at the Hyatt Regency.
And don't forget about our upcoming boot camps. We have the Director of Nursing Boot Camp coming up in May, at the end of May in 2024. And the Administrator's Boot Camp, the next Administrator's Boot Camp, is going to be in July 2024. So for more information about that, go to our website at asc-central.com. And there are on-demand versions of those boot camps, including our Business Office Manager Boot Camp. And that is also available on our website at asc-central.com. You might also be interested in our 2023 on-demand version of the Multi-State Conference, which is eligible for 16 AEUs and 4 IPCH credits. The conference includes great sessions on infection control, life safety, survey preparation, human resources, an introduction to the Medicare ASC payment system, pharmacy, and staff retention. And a reminder to everybody to become a patron member of the podcast. The patron member program, also known as ASC Central, is an exclusive membership website that provides a one-stop ASC regulatory and accreditation compliance, operations, and financial management resource for busy administrators, nurse managers, and business office managers. And resources include some of our virtual conferences, links to various resources, policies and procedures, forms, and fire and disaster drills, as well as our generally weekly drop-in sessions via Zoom on Saturday mornings to talk about anything ASCs with the hosts of the ASC podcast, as well as two and sometimes three surveyors to answer your questions. Membership helps to defray the cost of producing the podcast, including our wonderful research staff, travel costs to the conferences, equipment costs, and production costs. For more information, please visit asc-central.com. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. If you found this episode informative, we encourage you to share it with your friends and colleagues in the ASC industry. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. We would love any feedback about our episode or ideas for future episodes by sending us an email at comments@ascpodcast.com.
We'd like to give a special thank you to our great team here who make this podcast possible. Our sound editor, Susan Cronkite, our executive producer, John Gailey, and our dedicated research team, Sue Cronkite, Jenna Alvarez, Judy D'Ambrosio, Mike D'Ambrosio, Alex Borneman, Zach Kalaridis, Jim Masters, Amy Cronkite, Lori Rodericks, Kathy Vody, Donna Macchio, and Christina Norman. We couldn't do it without them.
And our music is provided by Media Sushi and Mike Nolan. The ASC Podcast with John Gailey is hosted on Podbean and is available on all major podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.
This episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is sponsored by Trivalence. Trivalence offers a comprehensive next-generation ASC solution that optimizes payment and supply chain performance, enabling actionable data insights. For more information about Trivalence, visit their website at trivalence.com. That's TRIVALENCE.com. This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development. All rights are reserved. If you're interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.